Hello there and welcome to our podcast, Conversations in Noosa. My name is John Caruso and this podcast is now available on the newly launched in Australia Google Podcasts. So there you go. Carolyn Mandersloot has been a palliative care nurse for nearly 30 years and she says that she's witnessed thousands of deaths during her professional nursing career. For the last few months, she's also been performing as a stand-up comedian. And I wanted to know whether this was simply an outlet and coping mechanism away from the pressures of living a nurse's life. I hope you enjoy the podcast.
I think it's also personality too. I think it's,
of course,
you know, when you're younger, you bring in coping mechanisms and being funny and making sure that everyone's happy and okay is probably a very big Mandersloot family trait. Coming from that Dutch background.
I don't know how many. I was going to say there wouldn't be many, but people that are involved in the kind of work that you do as a professional and then to have that outlet as a stand-up comedian, are there many?
I know a few nurses. There's a few nurses on the circuit and who have been around for quite a few years, but it's nurses are pretty funny and they're pretty dark. You get a few nurses at dinner and you get in some pretty dark stuff. So you don't want to be in a adjoining table overhearing a few wines and a night out with a bunch of nurses.
And again, I'm guessing that that's a bit of a coping mechanism. When you ask them why they got into it, what do they tell you?
Oh, I think that's the nature of the people that they were. I mean, I don't think stand-up comedy, you've got funny people, then you've got the stupid people that are going to stand up with a microphone in front of other people and try to be funny. I think that's the challenge. That's the bit if you want to take that on.
But what was your driver?
Well, I'd done some storytelling. So I'd sort of a few years in a row, I go off to a women's camp every year and there's a performance night. And I'd got up and told a couple of stories but had gotten a good response. But I was so nervous and just so embarrassed and didn't, you know, and then I'd sit straight down and go, oh, my God, what do I say? And lots of people said, oh, you're really funny. You should do stand-up. And then when that opportunity came with that masterclass that was a three-day chance to learn how to do stand-up, I just said, I'm going to do that. And it was just something completely for me that was it wasn't like I was doing it to better my career or...
And was that experience, I mean, a lot of performers will tell you that's why they perform, whether it's stand-up or whether it's playing an instrument or singing, it's for that instant feedback from a live audience. Was that, when you did it recently, was that the first time that you felt that kind of experience? Or had you, like, as a kid, I mean, you mentioned before that it was in your nature to entertain and make people laugh. Were you kind of a kid that put shows on for the family and that kind of thing?
Oh, no, I wasn't very talented in any sort of area. No, I played the recorder in a band once.
Like in a living room, you know, like, all right, here we go, let's go, you know, that kind of stuff.
I guess so, yeah. We sort of used to sort of put acts on for family, but nothing, you know, you wouldn't think, oh, yeah, I can understand that. That makes complete sense that she's now up performing.
Because I spotted it in her in a very young age that she would be up on the stage. I'm getting that this is a relatively new thing for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I literally have only been doing stand-up since like a few months, like it's literally since February. Melbourne International Raw Comedy Festival, they have it's called Raw and it goes around the whole of Australia and anyone can go in. So.
And how did you fare?
I did it. I did actually surprisingly really well. I got to the state finals.
All right. So it is like a competition.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. So you do the first heats and then you go through to the semi-finals and then whoever gets through goes to the state finals. And I got right through to that. And then one person from Queensland went down to Melbourne and did that. So I was shocked. Yeah.
I was going to say, do you remember how you felt when you made it through to the finals?
It was just that it was sort of like something that I wanted to tick off my bucket list because I thought, I'm going to go and do this stand-up. So I may as well go into this competition. I'll just do it the once and just see how I go. If I bomb out, so what?
It doesn't matter.
You get three shots at it.
Yeah.
And then I got through and it was like a big thing. So we're in Gympie. So to get down to Brisbane to go to this
pub
that we never go to and, you know, it was quite interesting actually. The very first one we did, a busload went down. So we went out the back to get prepped by the people running the competition and they said, all right, it's going to be a really good crowd out there and showed us how to use the microphone. And he said, there's probably about 100 people out there. And I'm sort of thinking, I've got a busload. I reckon about 40 of those people are here because I'm here. So I knew I had the crowd loaded in my...
You're drawing the crowd. Can you talk about the material then? What makes up your act? And where do you get ideas for your material?
Well, my material is really about death and dying. It's hysterical. So I work in death. And I guess to do stand-up was... I really wanted to get a voice out in the community to talk about death and dying. I work in community palliative care, so I specialise in people dying at home, and I see how wonderful that can be for families and to really negotiate them through that process. So, you know, Australian statistics say that 70% of Australians want to die at home, yet about 12% do. So I'm really interested in how do we increase that amount and how do we educate the community to be able to support our loved ones to die where they want to do. So part of that is getting a voice out there to talk. And
start a dialogue about that very topic.
Yes.
Yeah, well, what have you learned? I mean, I've kind of recently experienced this. My dad had prostate cancer, but it was over very quickly. You know, he went into hospital for 10 days and that was it. My mum, on the other hand, developed motor neurone disease. So that was and I'd never experienced anything like that. But there was no other way, really. I mean, I remember talking to her about coming to live with us, but she at least, you know, she was still of sound mind to go, you won't be able to cope. I mean, this thing's going to get pretty dire here.
The Sunshine Coast has got a wonderful palliative care, a very multi-award-winning palliative care specialist unit. And but it's really about, I mean, my experiences with a very on-the-ground, ground roots, a nursing service that's been in Gympie and surrounding areas for nearly 40 years. So I know no different. To me, it's just like, well, if it can be done, let's do it.
Yeah.
You know, if you need it, let's make it happen. If you need, you've got 24 hours, you know. And I think when people have that support, they can ring at any time and have a knowledgeable person on the other side of the line who can calm them down, give them advice.
And it's dependent on a lot of circumstances. I mean, we weren't next, my mum was in Bundaberg, so it was, you know, it was a fair way away and she didn't really have that support as much as we went up there often. You're right, when it comes to death, people, apart from the Irish probably, the Irish have a very different approach to it, don't they?
Mm.
Generally, with what you've experienced and Aussie culture, how do Australians deal with it?
I don't know, because I'm out in Gympie, so we get some real...
You're saying they're real, not Australian there? Whatever you're saying?
Well, real country people.
Yeah,
like, we get these old fellas that just go, yep, I'm going to die, I'm going to stay at home. And then the poor family have to just work out how they're going to make that happen.
Yeah.
But they're pretty determined and they just do it because that's that person's last wish. And I don't often meet people who regret any moment of caring for their loved ones at home. Often it's, they'll do everything they possibly can, and it's not often for a very long time. So,
what about dealing or coaching people and steering people through that grieving period afterwards?
It also depends on the families too. Like, you'll see families to get, you know, that you think, oh, this poor family, they're so disjointed, and then they just come together and just do it all so very well, and they, you know, create these amazing celebrations afterwards, and they process their grief the whole way through. And then you get people who you think are, you know, they're going to be really good, and they're not. Like, they just don't do the after bit very well. I mean, we follow up with bereavement for as long as necessary. So, but it's that gathering of the community, you know, it's not necessarily the one service that does it, but it's the people connected to that. So, and there's a lot of stuff happening in Australia at the moment about compassionate communities and communities coming together to support that time of life and to have more conversations about how to do it better, because in Australia we don't do it that well.
Can you give me an example of what you mean?
Our medicine is so good that you expect it to fix people. So when medicine's not going to fix that person and they're, you know, there's nothing more we can do, you know, or someone's going to die, and I'm talking about sort of, you know, known, most of the time in palliative care, it's someone who knows they're going to die. They've got a terminal condition. So that's not accidents and things like that. But it's almost like it's almost like a failure of the system to not fix that person. And it's, people tend to look at it like it's a failure. So instead of that person still being a person and they're just doing the next process, because you can guarantee 100% of people are going to die. So it's how they're going to get to that point.
Yeah.
They're not going to avoid it at all. And if you think about, you know, the population the baby boomers. There's a lot of those baby boomers who have had a lot of choice about how they've lived their lives, and you know, they've people are going to be well for longer, and they're going to be treating diseases better, but they're going to die as well. So I think as these baby boomers all start to get to that age, they're going to want to know what other choices are around there. That, I believe, is going to come from the community. It's not going to be about saying, all right, Queensland Health, sort this out for us.
With your material that you do as a stand-up comic, how long did you spend writing it? Is it a routine that whenever you're called on, Carolyn, to go and perform, that that's the routine? And do you kind of might change a joke here or there? Talk about your set, basically.
Well, I'm quite a storyteller, so I'm not sort of your short, sharp, bang, 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 funny, funny, funny. Right. So I tell stories.
But a Rodney Dangerfield style, a different style. He's more, you know, he's more of a like a machine gun.
Just bangs out all the funny dad jokes. No, I'm not like that. So, but the training that I did for the Raw Festival, you had to have 5 minutes. So, and that was literally, they judged you on, you know, how the crowd reacted, how funny you were. But when you're up on the stage, and that was the first time I pretty much got up on a stage with a microphone, was at 4.5 minutes. No, at 4 minutes, they flash the lights on and off. Then at 4.5 minutes, they flash the lights on and off again. And at 5 minutes, they just shut the lights off and played loud music. So if you weren't finished by then.
Or you hadn't made it to your punchline.
That's it. That was it. You lost points and you were just off. Yeah. So that it made me get very short and sharp with. And refine.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, which is good for comedy. So.
Do you, you know, I always admire comedians, and I've delved more and more into like some great docos on Netflix from Jerry Seinfeld, and the amount of work that goes into honing that craft. Have you kind of explored that at all?
Well, you've got to practice it.
Yeah.
So if you want to
get. But what you were saying before about honing it and fine tuning it and trimming even like a word or an or a that or a something out of that actor. And then how do you remember that when you're standing in front of a crowd to go, I've got to be as efficient as possible to deliver, you know, maximum laughs at the end of this line? How do you go about that?
You just practice it. You just get up on a stage with a microphone and sometimes you just die.
Do you practice at home, like in front of the mirror or?
Not so much. I tend to talk into my phone. So then joke or a new story, I'll record it and then I'll listen back and then, you know, I'll tweak it a bit, then listen back. And I also, there's another lady, Anna Brennan, who's from Gympie as well. She was also in the Raw. She got runner up. And so we travel a lot down to Brisbane together to go to open mic. So, and she's great. Like, she's been doing it for a lot longer than me. And we bounce back and we practice new stuff.
What's her background? She also a nurse?
No. She's a, she makes badges.
Okay. So, what drew you to nursing?
Well, my mum was a nurse. So I just always wanted to be a nurse. I just, whenever we'd go into the hospital to visit someone, I'd just like the smell and the.
You do, you like the smell of the hospital.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. I don't know. Like, but just wanting to know what was happening and what was going wrong and, you know, who, what was that, you know, every story I wanted to know about. So it was a given. I was very lucky to get into the last hospital nursing intake down in Melbourne at Panj. So that made a big difference because I just went straight into working and training the old way that they used to do it. So I don't know. I just love the I stepped into death really early with my nursing. So to be honest, I've been a nurse for nearly 30 years and I've actually not really ever been involved in resus. So and I've had and dealt with probably thousands of people who have died. So that was a really early thing that I came to terms with. So I tended to work more in oncology. I worked back on an AIDS unit when I lived over in Perth, which was a really great, you know, a medical unit and community palliative care for the last 10 years. So I don't know, there's something about you don't have to do very much to really make a difference for someone's experience of what they're going through. So whether that's just sitting there and holding their hand and keeping them calm or explaining what's going to happen so they're not so frightened, or it's, you know, working out what's going wrong with them so you can get onto that really quickly.
And why is that, you think? Is it because, you know, it's close to the end, there's not a lot of other distractions about, and there's a certain amount of clarity over what's important and what's not important in those final days or weeks? Is that, you think
in,
that's what?
In the palliative sense? So working with people who are dying?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. It's, I love how people just strip things down to the absolutely most important things. That's right there for them. You know, they get rid of all the crap. And part of, I guess, my job is to work with people about that. You know, well, how important is this? And, you know, do you really want to renovate your whole bathroom when realistically you've probably only got weeks? Like, why don't you spend that money and go away with your family? So, you know, just it's just putting things into perspective.
I guess people are also pulling on distractions as well, though, aren't they? That
yeah.
Even though there is a clarity, there's kind of to take their mind away from what's really happening. I want to quickly talk about, because you did send me the link, what's your involvement with, is it Little Silk Wings?
Yeah, so it's a project, an event called Let Me See My Baby, and it's a I'm on the panel and a panel discussion on with both professionals and community members on how to support our families when our babies and children die. And it started actually on the Sunshine Coast in Yandina last August, and Amy Banson, who's the creator of it, decided that she was going to take it around Australia. So we've gone down to Canberra, Melbourne, Hobart, we went to Adelaide. We end up having to cancel because we didn't sell enough tickets, but we're in Perth next month. So
what is it? What is it like a
so it's a panel discussion. So it's we have probably about six people on the panel, and it's really just about talking about things like grief and what to say and what not to say. We always have a midwife who works in a local hospital. We try to use local people on the panel to make it specific for that area. And it's a really beautiful. We create the space, so it's very, it's like having those really difficult conversations, you know, in your lounge room.
Yeah.
So
it's, mums and dads come along.
Both tend to be more more women, but we usually have a male on the panel as well to give that man perspective on afterwards and how they
what do they normally say? What would a bloke say in a scenario like that with partner or wife is miscarried or stillborn baby? What's kind of his perspective on that?
Well, the gentlemen that we've had have sort of talked about that they tend to want to do. Like, they want to look after their wife, but they want to do stuff.
Not sure how to do it.
They don't necessarily want to talk about it, but they...
Yeah.
And the things that they've found comfort in is sort of, you know, maybe catching up with another bloke who's gone through the same thing, but you go to the football together. So you do the football, but at the same time you can... Yeah, so that tend to be what they... sort of more spoke about,
right?
You know, and you see, like, we had one really, I can't remember his name at the moment, from Bears of Hope, and he actually started Bears of Hope, which was, you know, where they give them a package of a teddy bear and some things like that to take home from hospital for families who lose their babies when they're in hospital. And he did something really great. But we always like having the men there because it's nice to hear how they go with things. So
before we wrap up, how do you deal with hecklers?
I'm
not talking in the hospital. I'm talking about, although you might get heckled in that. Do you get difficult patients? I guess you would. How do you deal with them? Cold spoon? Is that what it is?
Well, I always say my superpowers are either making people laugh or making people cry. So it just depends on how I want to use those superpowers. And I think it's the same. I haven't actually been heckled yet, but I have this line in my head that it's something about, you know, you know that one day, like, you know what I do, don't you? So, but I haven't had to get heckled. I think they have a bit too much respect for me that I'm not, that they probably look at me and think I'm going to cry if they heckle me
too
much.
Plus you're just starting out. I think it would
plus
be,
I'm starting
people
out.
Sitting in the crowd thinking, oh, I don't want to be that cruel.
Yeah, don't put that out there.
But how far do you want to take it? I'm talking about the stand-up comedy now.
Well, I'm just surprised because I get phone calls from people saying, oh, I'm organising this festival and your name came up and someone recommended you. Can you come and perform? And it's just like, well, yes, but... You know, I've only been doing it for about 5 seconds and like, oh, no, you were really funny. I saw you. So it's been good. So we just did the Anywhere Theatre Festival, just gone and, yeah, just sort of in conversations with different people around the community who have got things coming up. And
can you share a tip or two about you talked about when you went to the planting and the kind of the comedy workshop or whatever you want to call it, and you said, you know, one of the things was learning how to hold a mic. Is there any others that you can recall for any kind of budding stand-up comedians that are listening to this going, oh, yeah, I've got to work on that as well, or what can you remember?
I don't know, like, because when you're on the stage, you've often got bright lights in your face, so you can usually only see the people directly in front of you. I think when you look at the person who's laughing at you, not at the one that's not laughing, because otherwise you're just trying
right.
so hard to make that person yeah. laugh and they're not going to. So.
And do you take notes during the day if the funny – oh, you talked about your phone, but how often would you change a punchline or come up with a different line or observe something? Is it a daily thing for you where you go, yeah, I could use that in my act?
It's not quite daily though, but I do feel sorry for my poor friends because I literally have been telling them these stories for years. Yeah. And so it's almost like, right, I'm going to tell that birthing story, you know, the one with the dog and the cat. And they're like, yeah, tell that one. So it's a matter of sort of embellishing that so right. I can say it up on stage. So.
Right. Carolyn, I really appreciate you coming in and having a chat and sharing some of your stories.
Thank you so much.
Carolyn Mandersloot there. I really enjoyed having a chat with Carolyn. And if you enjoyed the podcast, feel free to share it about on your social media networks, on Twitter, on Facebook. And remember, our podcasts are now available on Google Podcasts. If you're an Android user, if you're an Apple user, we're still on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Wooshka. And every week, two fresh podcasts up on our In Noosa Magazine website, innoosamagazine.com.au/conversations. Every Monday and Thursday, there's a fresh podcast. Until next time, take care.